Welcome to That South African Discussions. Today we will be debating, or talking rather, about constitutional supremacy. This is an extremely critical conversation to be had in South Africa, as people believe you cannot criticize the constitution, however it is worthy criticism, which works towards the construction of our democracy. Just for some context, and I'm joined by my usual co-host, Veli. Nice having you here, Veli. Now, just for some context, South Africa's constitution was adopted in 1996 after the new South Africa was born, of course, after the demise of apartheid and the birth of democracy in South Africa. It is a supreme law of our democracy. We are a constitutional democracy, and all laws inconsistent with it are invalid. It's been described as a hybrid mix of Roman Dutch law influenced by English law, as well as indigenous and customary law. And quickly, just some facts. Changing it is extremely hard. You need 8 out of 9 or 6 out of 9 provinces in the NCOP, the National Council of Provinces. And this depends, of course, on whether in which chapter the law is in, as well as 66 to 70% of the National Assembly. So, Veli, why don't you start with your opinions on the Constitution, and we'll work from there.
So, I have no problems with the country setting rules or certain things that a country should follow. But my problem with the Constitution is that the rules and things that are following, it's just, it has no real life effect. It's just words written on paper, and it's not actually having an impact in real life on people. We are still having, and that the Constitution doesn't really explain how one should think and how there's still inequality in South Africa. And the Constitution doesn't deal with the fact that it's just rules written on paper that is not actually having an impact on someone's life, and is still leaving into inequality. And the main issue I have is that the Constitution has borrowed many ideas and many characteristics from the old apartheid government, and they've just changed a few words and a few meanings. And that is why we still see a big gap between the rich and the poor, because the Constitution is not, its main focus is leaving an elite number of people who have the money and run the country, just like during the apartheid.
Okay, may I please interject?
Okay,
so firstly, there's a variety of points that I would like to discuss there. But the first one is the fact that you claim that the Constitution has characteristics of the apartheid government. And given that it perhaps may have similar ones, I would, of course, like you to expand on this claim. However, it is undoubtedly different to the apartheid constitution in simply its ideas. You can't call it the same at all. The apartheid constitution was designed to divide and create inequality. Now, you talked about inequality quite a lot there, and how it's designed to serve an elitist group. And I'd just like to counter that by saying that the whole idea of the Constitution is to have real-life effects. Well, given it does not guarantee service delivery, and that is an issue, of course. However, it is designed to hold the government accountable for not giving service delivery, for not providing equality, which is the ultimate goal of the Constitution, to provide social cohesion, and via that, social development, and even if not via social cohesion, social development. So, first of all, it is not designed to serve an elitist grouping. That is an opinion I've heard quite often. It is actually designed to serve the people of South Africa. In its in the way the government has implemented it, it has not. I'll give that. However, it is designed to create equality, unlike the apartheid constitution, which was designed to create inequality and to oppress people. It is designed to uplift people, and it is designed to be key to social development. For example, the rights to housing, the right to security, the right to water. All of this is provided in the Constitution. And it states very simply that the government must provide these. So it's designed to have real-life benefits. Without the Constitution, the government would not have to provide housing, would not have to provide water or security or any other key aspects of social development.
Yeah, what I have to say is that the first few sections of the Constitution I agree with, where it's like you have to treat people equally, everyone's equal, and being fair to others and equal opportunity. Okay, but in practice it is not working, and even the members of the government are not taking it seriously, and it's a common occurrence that they go against the constitution.
We need wouldn't you argue that's why the constitution is essential? Without the constitution there wouldn't be nothing to go against. We would not be able to say they are going against anything.
Yes, but we are. But many times the constitution by many members is going against, people are going against it.
I would say the government of South Africa has flouted the constitution. They have not provided housing and equality and equal opportunity to the millions of poor people, poor black people, poor ships. But the whole point of the constitution is that they're flouting it. Now, the constitution is designed to mitigate that. It's designed to negate this flouting of human rights. So the constitution is, in fact, you're talking about the implementation of the constitution. I'm talking constitution. So that was just to clarify where we stand. Now, you did mention that you are okay with the first few chapters of the constitution. Are there any other chapters that you perhaps have a problem with?
I have a problem with recently the government trying to change the constitution on land rights and ownership of land.
So section 25.
Yeah.
That would be section 25.
My issue is that this is just making the government being able to change anything. Now want them wanting to change the constitution about land rights. I don't know the specific term, but that's what I will use. Now them wanting to change this certain thing, it brings the realization that they can change anything, and this can start them to change the rules on freedom of speech, etc., etc. And the government will, this gives the government power to really do what they want, changing the rules of the country.
Okay, so firstly, as I stated, the government can change the constitution. It's not very easy to do so. First of all, just to clarify on this matter, the government isn't doing this unhandedly. There has been a democratic process that has been followed, the due democratic process. To change the constitution, you need 8 out of 9, or 6 out of 9 in this case, I presume, considering it is a chapter 2 bill, I presume you need 8 out of 9, although I'm no legal expert, I can't talk on the matter, 8 out of 9 provinces, and perhaps 77% of the National Assembly. This means that the representative of the people, which is parliament, not just government, the representative of the people is changing the constitution. If the people are unhappy about this, the people will vote them out. And while I agree that it is not necessary to change it, the constitution in fact already allows for land expropriation without compensation. If you would like, I can clarify upon that. However, I believe that there's no risk of them limiting freedom of speech, limiting, you know, this, it won't manage to go through the National Assembly, and it won't manage to go through the NCOP. It'll be a threat to democracy, so people won't like it, and people will vote the government out. So there is, changing the constitution is not a matter of threat. It's the constitution itself protects itself in that manner, that you need an overwhelming majority and it needs to be a democratic process. So the government changing the constitution will not at all hinder democratic process, or is not a threat to the constitution.
The problem is that the constitution at the beginning was okay, but there's clearly no need for a change in the constitution. But this is a scheme and an idea that Ramaphosa and ANC have done so they can gain vote.
I'll agree with you there. It is a political maneuver. However, we're not talking party political affiliation or party politics in this case. We are talking on the constitution. And just quickly to clarify something, freedom of speech, freedom of security, equality, human dignity, life, freedom of security of person, slavery, servitude, and forced labor, children's rights, arrested, detained, and accused persons, those are non-derogable rights. In other words, the fundamentals of the constitution, the fundamental human rights, and freedom of speech is considered being included in this, and generally it is considered a non-derogable right, even though it's not directly directly in the Constitution is generally implied, these rights cannot be changed. If there's an amendment to the Constitution, it will not happen in this section. It cannot happen, it will not happen. So there is no threat to the fundamentals of the Constitution. And so just to state that now, are there any particular chapters or sections that you do have a problem with?
No, it was, as I said, the first few chapters or sections of the Constitution, I feel like those are basically basic human rights. They're nothing too in detail. But as you go on into more detail, where it goes to like the general provisions, the finance, and the traditional leaders and that. These, some of them are not relevant in today's society. And the Constitution, if it's kept the same from 1994, as 1994 was a very different society to it, is it now?
1996?
Sorry. When it was properly established, the Constitution. It was very different from now. Now, if you keep going by these laws of the Constitution, it'll come to a time when the Constitution just does not apply to today's South Africa.
Okay, so you're not talking about Chapter 2, just to clarify, you're talking about general provisions, and after, I presume, that's after Chapter 11, traditional leaders, finance, general provisions, I presume you're talking about that?
Yeah.
Okay, I will say this, that there are perhaps some outdated aspects of the Constitution, and that's why the Constitution can be changed if it is irrelevant and just change. And I will agree that it does need to be outdated. However, the society has not changed to the extent that it is needed to be changed. And if it does, it will be changed by a due democratic process.
But the Constitution, its main focus is to bring laws in. But does the laws actually apply in society? How much is individuals in South Africa, how much do they actually know about the Constitution?
That would be a problem of one not knowing one's rights. However, the Constitution is freely available and it is heavily promoted by the South African government. And in fact, internationally, it's an internationally acclaimed document. It's very widespread, very easy. Internet copies are freely available, and 93% of South Africa's population does have a smartphone, and it is freely available for print as well in various institutions. I have a copy here. I picked it up from a bookshop. I didn't have to pay for it. So I will agree with you there that not many people know their rights. However, it is our duty as people who do know our rights to help people who don't. And that's why that's one of the fundamentals of the Constitution as well.
But also, you have to take in consideration now that South Africa is so divided, and we have many sections and communities in South Africa. Now, how does one constitution in South Africa, which, to be honest, is technically not a, if that, I hope it doesn't offend anyone, a real country. And what I mean by that is that when the British came here, they made the border so that it doesn't align with the different cultural groups and that.
Now, of course, but I mean, so now what we are talking about is, of course, the carving up of Africa. And I'll agree that colonial power smashed together various African communities. However, the whole point is that for 300 in South Africa, 300 years, black communities, African communities from the beginning, of course, after that Indian and colored, were all oppressed together. Now, as a collective, we're oppressed. This is why, of course, there's a common identity of non-white or black, if you wish. And the Constitution is quite an amazing document. It's one of the few constitutions in the world that has a hybrid legal system, which I stated in the beginning. So it's a blend of Roman Dutch and traditional customary law that takes into account various communities in South Africa. And its main goal is to unite. And thus far, according to the South African community, it's how it's been received. It's generally received as a document that has the ability to unify the amazing diversity. And the point is that we now cannot break up South Africa. We are all Africa. We are all oppressed as South Africans, or the oppressors as South Africans. Not to say that anyone is an oppressor now. But South Africa is now a national identity. We're going to have to deal with that in the sense. And the Constitution of South Africa is a unifying document that if there is overwhelming need for self-determination from a community, it is provided for within the very Constitution. And of course, that needs historical evidence. It needs massive community backing. And thus far, no community has chosen for self-determination overwhelmingly. So the Constitution is accepted as a unifying document by all communities in South Africa.
Well, the back to the point where the carving part of South Africa was a bit out of context. It's just something to bring in. But what I was getting at is that we have so many communities and different societies in South Africa that how is one constitution for everyone in South Africa going to help everyone?
Well, as I stated, you can't have more than one constitution unless you go into a decentralized state. Now that's a bit off topic, that's a very heavy conversation, that's a different conversation. But we are a centralized state as South Africa. The Constitution does its best to unify, as I said before, it's a hybrid document, which is a very brave decision by those who drafted the Constitution to go with a hybrid model. Not many people do know it's a hybrid model, but it is. It takes into account various communities and societies. For example, as you said, chapter, if I'm not mistaken, 11 takes into account traditional healers. That's in most African societies. That's aspect of many African societies, my mistake, chapter 12. That was not required under Roman Dutch law or English law, but it was included. And there are various examples within the Constitution. I am not an expert on the Constitution, however, if you talk to one, they will surely tell you that it takes into account the considerations of all communities. And as I said before, if a community, a particular community, overwhelmingly, justifiably feels the Constitution is not what they want, if they feel that the state of South Africa is something that is irrelevant, self-determination within the very Constitution is provided for. However, thus far, none have chosen the path of self-determination, and we are a centralized state of South Africa, and the Constitution is our unifying document.
Yeah, but I don't think, in my opinion, and I speak on behalf of myself, that a constitution based on everyone in South Africa is going to help. I believe that we should have a basic rights, not too in-depth constitution, which gives the basic rules. And then we should
Well, that's all the constitution is. It is an outline of basic human rights. It doesn't go into heavy detail. Yeah, it goes into the running of the government, accountability of the government, and basic human rights. The rest of the details are followed up by laws that must be consistent with the constitution, as you said.
Constitution of South Africa, it goes too much in detail and it generalizes. But when I say generalize, it makes it for everyone. We need individual constitutions for every community or society or province or whatever.
Now perhaps the problem with that, as I said, is you need a decentralized state. That's a bit off topic. And for that, that comes with its own problems. I'll just point them out. For example, if one constitution is inconsistent with another and that constitution is inconsistent with basic human rights, what document holds the aforesaid constitution to account? That's the first one. Second of all, does each community now have its own self-determining leader? If so, what defines a community? What stops someone from forming their own idea of a community? Now, if the communities in South Africa are very hard to box in. For example, within the colored community, there are various communities in that. Within the African community, there are various communities within that. Within the Indian community, there are various communities in that. And within the white community, I know there are at least three, or various, or more. The problem comes in as a decentralized state. Now, those are the issues with a decentralized state, but the point is we are a centralized state of South Africa, and the Constitution is designed to work to the benefit of all of us.
Yeah, I understand that, but every society has different ways in their cultural groups and what happens there and what is acceptable there.
And the Constitution does not impose that on anyone. It doesn't impose Western ideals on anyone, doesn't impose African ideals on anyone.
Yes, but every society is different.
Exactly, the Constitution recognizes that, unity in diversity.
But does it really?
It does, yes.
But if you look at the constitution, it just generalizes everyone that they have to follow these rules. And then it says at the end that, oh...
So in particular, do you have any defining sections or chapters that impose or perhaps are inconsistent with the community?
Well, recently about the constitution's rules on corporal punishment, okay, they're wanting to change corporal punishment. Now, in African society and also in some Western societies, spanking your child is acceptable. Now, why is the constitution bringing these rules, and if it's not relatable to that society?
Well, may I add, that was a decision by the Constitutional Court. It's not specified within the constitution. That was an interpretation, and here's where we come to the topic of interpretation. Now, so if we say the concept is sound, just hypothetically, and I know perhaps you may disagree, what we interpret it as is from a very Western ideal. Despite the constitution being a hybrid, it's not a Western constitution. The whole idea of democracy is claimed to be Western, and I've talked about this in a previous episode, and we interpret our constitution as a Western constitution, but truly it's not a Western constitution. Now, interpretation can change. However, the fundamental concept of the constitution is sound. It's a hybrid model. But if you interpret it from one model, it's not going to work. So While I disagree perhaps with the to ban corporal punishment, it was in the idea that South Africa suffers with high rates of abuse, and many parents justify corporal punishment up to the extent that even sexual harassment is justified as corporal punishment. I'm in no way defining any community in this sense. This is a general trend observed among all communities in South Africa, that in some cases sexual harassment has been said to be a form of punishment. The constitutional court took this into account under its interpretation of the constitution, deciding in order to negate such circumstances, corporal punishment in general should be banned. While I don't agree with it personally, it was in their interpretation in the best interests of South Africa. If it was not in the best interests of South Africa, the constitution can be interpreted in a different manner. And it's possible to change that judgment if they get an overwhelming response to change it or interpret it in a different light.
Look, I understand that point. I understand that it helps people with their rights, and it's a fundamental thing that's needed in every society. But when the constitution inflicts on someone's rights to specifically property, that's when there's a problem.
You're saying the constitution infringes on property rights?
Yes, because here it says property may be expropriated only in terms of law of general application for public purpose or in the public interest. So purely because the public wants that piece of land, they get it.
Okay, well, firstly, let me define in terms of law of general application. This implies you can't infringe on anyone's rights in an unjustified manner that inflicts on non-derogable rights. In fact, it states in a later section that it may not, that Section 36 can overrule this, and that is your non-derogable rights. Now, this is not to say that just because the public wants land, the public gets land. This implies if the public needs land, if it is in the public's best interest to receive this land, if it will work in favor to the public, the people of South Africa, then it is relevant.
But, so do you agree that if it's the public's interest to obtain the land, they should, the constitution should agree with that also?
Well, we can't be talking specifically because the constitution, as I said, is an outline, not a particular document. If you're talking about a specific land, then negating and possible circumstances. However, in general, if it is in the public's interest to initiate a process of redress, which is provided in the Constitution, redress measures, and land expropriation with or without compensation, then yes, it will be implemented.
So, your... into property rights. So basically infringing into
Can you please repeat that? The line wasn't very good.
What I was basically saying is that just because the public's interest shouldn't allow you to infringe your property rights.
Well, it's not infringing on property rights because no property rights are infringed upon in the Constitution.
It is. Just because the public interest... Just because it's...
So what you're saying is public interest is not foremost to...
No, it's the individual who owns the land's interest. That should be...
Okay, so you're talking about individual rights? If their rights are not infringed on, determined by the state and by the Constitution, then it is best to undergo a process. And we're talking about land reform once again. However, land expropriation does not infringe on individual property rights. If it is not arbitrary, as it is said here, deprivation of property, which is the dual law process of land expropriation, not land seizure, not just going there and clapping someone on the head and taking the land. And it, if it is in the best interests of the people of South Africa in general, then a process will undergo.
Okay, I think we're done with that. What I want to move on is with BE and affirmative action.
Okay, redress measures. So affirmative action is the one that most people understand in the Constitution. In this context, we're talking about redress measures. That's what's said in the Constitution. But we will go with affirmative action. But if you're looking for it in the Constitution, look for redress measures.
Okay. Basically, the Constitution states for equal opportunity. Now, I agree with equal opportunity. But the Constitution should make it priority that it's based on economic and not on racial base.
Okay, I think we're going back to a talking point we've had for the past few conversations. Now, it appears that what you're not contemplating is that economic and racial inequality are interlinked in South Africa. Unless you have another reason for why 80% of South Africa's black population owns no measurable wealth, according to a recent study, or another reason why the black population is considerably poorer than the white population, and a reason why the white population is considerably richer, or at least 99.4% of the white population is considerably richer than the majority of the black population. So racial and economic inequality are interlinked in South Africa. The Constitution was drafted to ensure that at least racial inequality is wiped out so that everyone can afterwards be equally uplifted, and that's what equity is. So the Constitution, you yourself said that the Constitution is to generate, it's too heavy. This will just make it heavier.
Yes, but if you implement an idea and correctly put in the Constitution that you put on economic and not on racial.
Really, the reality is economic inequality and racial inequality are linked in South Africa, unless you can disprove this.
It's not like this is just going to benefit white people. Everyone will, majority of black people will benefit from an idea like...
I don't know where you got the statement from. I did not make the statement. What I'm saying is economic and racial inequality are linked in South Africa.
Yes, but if you break it based on economics, majority of poor people in South Africa are poor. The majority of them...
The Constitution doesn't specify race in particular. It specifies very much equal opportunity. And the fact is, opportunity in South Africa is based on race.
Wait, you say there's equal opportunity, but then you said that it's based on race. That is not equal opportunity.
Yes, your opportunity in South Africa is determined by your... I'm saying your equal opportunities, your opportunity in South Africa is determined by your race. If you are born black, your chances are your equal, your opportunity will be determined by the color of your skin.
Yeah, but so basically opportunity.
But that really, I think you're misinterpreting equal opportunity. Now, equal opportunity does not mean everyone is equal. Everyone is not equal in South Africa. The reality is, as I said, unless you can disprove it, black people are considerably poorer than the white population. As such, do not have the same opportunities due to past their hardships and experiences of which the effects we are still feeling today. And as I said, you can provide a negating circumstance in that case. The Constitution is designed to ensure that in the end, everyone will be on the same level.
But Naz, implementing this idea based on economics will majority benefit black people, because majority...
But as I said, but, as I've said many, many times, the Constitution does not specify it necessarily has to be. So you'll be changing nothing in the Constitution, first of all. And second of all, as I stated earlier, unless you can disprove that that your race does not determine your opportunity and that the black population is not considerably poorer than the white population, then economic and racial inequality are interlinked in South Africa.
Yes, of course.
And the Constitution provides for negating circumstance where in the future there will be opportunity not based on race but based on economics. In this case, it is based on both.
But, okay, of course, economics and race are linked. But making it based on economics does not exclude the minority poor white population. So
that's 0.4. That's 0.4% of the population, Vili. Of the white population, that's 18,000 people versus 22,400,000 black of the black population.
And both of them will benefit.
18,000 versus over 20 million.
Because you're making it based on economics.
Really, perhaps I should bring in the point here that white people have had the opportunity, and I'm not in no way saying that a white poor person is in any way different to a black poor person. However, in terms of the intelligence, in terms of anything, however, what I'm saying is that black people were oppressed under apartheid, full stop. White people were not. White people had every opportunity under apartheid to benefit. And may I add, majority of the poor white population is of the age in which they were benefiting under apartheid. Or do you deny that white people benefited under apartheid? The whole point is white people did benefit. Majority of the poor white population in South Africa was the age to benefit. They did not benefit from 300 years of generational wealth and 50 years of intense upliftment designed specifically for them and the majority. And the fact is, the black population was oppressed under apartheid. As such, you can assume the black population is still oppressed, which it is, unless you can provide, as I said, and disprove it. And as such, should receive benefit in order for everyone to get on the same level. We are talking about 18,000, as I said, versus over 20 million.
But Naz,
who would be the priority in this case?
You're including everyone. Everyone that is below the birth line. Everyone that can just
as I said, that's 0.4% below LBL poverty, which is the breadline. So you don't care poverty line, below the breadline.
So you don't care about that 0.4%. You say they should just suffer.
I believe that we should prioritize. We should prioritize as a country. The black population was oppressed. The white population was not oppressed. The white population was not oppressed and had every opportunity to benefit. The black population did not have that opportunity. And in fact, if you are a black person and you are oppressed, if you are a black person, you will not have the same opportunity.
But Naz,
black people are poorer than the white population in South Africa. As such, should receive prioritization. Our state needs to prioritize and uplift the over 20 million people.
But I fully believe in the compensation of those today, and I'm talking about today, that have suffered under the apartheid and have not been given equal opportunities. Those people should be compensated. But making it purely based on race,
that is the black population, that's a majority of the black population. The very, very few have benefited in fact from affirmative action. In implementation, it has failed, and we can now hold, because of our constitution, the government to account for that.
But Naz, this leads for a minority to take advantage of the system. Think about it. Ramaphosa's son can take advantage of the system. Does he need it? No.
And it will be an unfortunate circumstance if he does.
Well, that's how it's
working. The reality is, that these are small, minuscule negating circumstances. Majority of the time, there are no negating circumstances. And I would just like to reiterate once again that we are now debating redress measures. The Constitution does not say it has to be based on race. It says it has to be based on past hardships. And that would be in the preamble, not necessarily in the equality section. So, as I said, in the future, when there will be negating circumstances in which your economic opportunity is no longer determined by your race, then redress measures will be based on economics. However, at the moment, opportunity is determined by race in South Africa.
But people, a minority is taking advantage of the system.
For the sake of one or two people, in terms of you talking about Ramaphosa's son, I presume you're talking about the BE elite. That makes up a very small amount, under 1%, at least according to what the measures and the levels you have put on by Ramaphosa's son, the under 1% of the black population. In fact, may I just add, in the top 50 richest South Africans, there are only 5 black South Africans. That just proves that these only 5 people will benefit unfairly compared to over 20 million LBL poverty, let alone the millions upper bound poverty line, which is still poverty. So I think we're getting to the same point. As I said, the Constitution does not specify it has to necessarily be on race. It's designed to flatten out past hardships in the end, when it will eventually, as I said, negating circumstances, be based on economics. Now we're getting back to the same point over and over. The Constitution is not the current debate that we're having now, despite it meant to be. So concluding statement, and we move on to your next point.
All I want to say is that I was going to bring up an example, but I'll leave that if it's based on economics, it doesn't bring a divide between the rich and the poor, because BEE and affirmative action is just dividing the gap between the rich and the poor. And
in it's practice, not just yes, like, I just like to make sure you're talking about practice or concept or both.
Both.
Talking about both, okay.
And this is not just being taken advantage by the black minority, you apparently say.
Yes, a black minority. If you have negating circumstances, if you have other statistics, please provide them.
It's also being taken advantage by white individuals, because they would use a black individual and just use them as a puppet and take advantage of them.
As a front, yes, and that would be implementation. We need,
and that is why it's not working.
And that would be implementation. Well, that's perfect in implement. That's what you're talking about is implementation. That's not related to the Constitution. That's not related to the concept at all. Now, are there any other discrepancies that you perhaps picked up in the Constitution?
Well, it was only really those points. The first few chapters I've agreed with. It's only when you get more in depth.
Okay, so let me just, for example, bring in a few points as just a summary of more or less my arguments. The Constitution is key to social development. While it does not directly provide for service delivery, it allows the people of South Africa to hold the government accountable for not providing services. So in other words, it has real-life, concrete benefits for the people of South Africa. It forwards social cohesion, which is essential, unless you disagree, to South Africa moving forward as a united country. It's fundamental to our democracy, with constitutional supremacy, and it's key to our democracy functioning, of which we do have a very well-functioning democracy in terms of concept. It's a hybrid legal system, so it takes into account the various communities in South Africa, of which we have many, a multicultural society. And in this manner, it can be interpreted in a variety of ways, of which a multi-pluralism approach is the best. And it's just overall successful. It's designed for the people. It will it is already supreme in terms of law, and it is, I personally believe, and many do believe, one of the best constitutions in the world.
I fully believe that we need a constitution, but my final statement is that the constitution needs adjustments, crucial adjustments, so everyone is given equal opportunity in South Africa.
So I personally believe it's already provided for in the constitution, equal opportunity, and this is a conversation that will carry on. Of course, it will always does. It's been a pleasure debating with you, Veli. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
And that was That South African Discussions today on constitutional supremacy and the fundamentals to the constitution. Tweet us at South African That if you have any comments. And please leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Thank you for listening. This conversation is not over, never will be.